many blessings to Socrates' spirit. So I'm naming this talk Transcending Duality to Come into Oneness. And Socrates' poetry was about his journey of transcending all the duality that he felt that he had with inside him and that he also experienced on the outside. And basically the anguish and the pain and the hurt, you know, of the ego and all that we go through as humans, right? And how to get through that to come it back into oneness. And you'll, if you read a lot of his poetry, a lot of it's about love, but also a lot of it's about how to get through that duality and what the truth is around that duality. So Transcending Duality to Come into Oneness. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about Socrates. He was born in the Washington, D.C. area, and he decided to move to California because he was going to do like a little bit of acting. And he got there, and he was on Baywatch and different movie places that were calling, and he ended up being on like all the different talk shows, Sally, Jesse, Raphael, and like, I don't know, 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 different talk shows and stuff like that for... because he was a bodybuilder and he won Mr. Maryland and things of that nature. So that got him to going to California, to pursuing that sort of thing, which is somewhat vain, as we can imagine, right? Right? It's a little, there's some vanity in that. maybe just a little, right? Okay. So anyway, he was walking through California, like on the street, past the Paramahansa Yogananda temple, you know, in Encinitas, California. And he'd walk it every day, but he was walking it because he was trying to lose weight so he could be shredded, so he could be a Chippendale dancer, right? another really good, fun, vain thing, right? So he's walking. And then one day he had this, like, epiphany. And he looked to the right on one side of the street, and he noticed like materialism and, you know, and money and all the stuff of the 3D reality. And then he looked to the right and he saw the ocean, and he saw more of the nature and more of the spirituality and more of that aspect of reality. And it kind of woke up something in him. And he continued on his journey in California. He found a place to live and a babysitting job and a car that someone gave him. And he was going to continue to pursue that acting thing, right? And then he heard a voice that says, go to Maryland, go back to Maryland, where is where he was born and raised. He's go back. I have an opportunity to be, like, possibly in movies, and I have a place to live and a car that someone gave me and a babysitting job. I mean, why would I go back to Maryland? But he listened to the voice, and he got in his car. He told his friend who he was going to babysit for and who gave him the car, so I'm really sorry that I can't help you. I heard a voice. I got to go. And he got in his car, and he drove all the way across the United States from California to the East Coast, which is like a 3 or 4 day drive. Never stopped except for gas. Never slept. Just was like, heard the voice, followed it. Boom. And then got back to the Maryland area, met a massage teacher, and decided to go into massage. And she was like into the healing arts and all that sort of thing. And that's how his spiritual journey started to take off, right? But it started with that little spark that awakens in us. You know, we all have that at some point in our journey. Oh, and then he met me many years later. He got married, had kids, lived his life, was on his spiritual journey for a really, really long time, had all kinds of synchronicities on his journey. And then he met me, which is a kind of a wild story in and of itself. But so we started our journey together, I'm not going to go into all that. I don't know how much time we have, so I don't know how much to go into. But point being is, we decided to move to Sedona, Arizona, which was a really, really big deal, you know, to move across the United States. And then we got there, and soon after we got there, about a year after we got there, he started to like kind of hear messages kind of coming through. he started to write them down. And they were kind of like prophetic messages that were kind of coming through. And he would do it in the, like in the morning when we'd wake up, we would always stay in bed. He'd get me coffee, and he'd get our coffee, and he'd bring it to us, and we would be stay in bed, and then we'd meditate. You know, we'd do spiritual reading, and then we'd meditate, and then he would start his writing right there. Anyway, okay, so then that went on for a long time, and he wrote many, many poems. And then I met this girl named Lindsay, who ended up becoming like one of my best friends. And she started this publishing company called Awaken Press, and she lives in Sedona. And actually, she's doing one of Forrest's books. I introduced Forrest to her. She's the sweetest. So she decided that she would pick up his book for him. And he finished all the editing and everything that he wanted to tell her about his book right before he passed away. So it was just like divine timing. Really kind of neat, you know, and how that all worked out. So his journey did not come without a lot of pain and a lot of duality, and he did have a lot of like internal conflict, which I know a lot of us do, but some of us have a lot more than others, right? You know, and so his poetry will show how he worked that through. And then what he used to always say to me is, "We're having an alchemical relationship," and I'll explain that a little bit, because an alchemical relationship is a relationship a little bit of kind of trying to move through the duality. You know, it's when two people's egos are crashing with each other, and the shadows are coming up, right? Which is, shadows are our deepest fears and pains and wounds, right? And the shadows are coming up, and the ego's coming up, and there's this crashing, but there's this deep spiritual desire to purify and to heal and to grow together. So it's this alchemical dance of burning the denser, more painful things within the fire of God. And so we had an alchemical relationship as well. And then we were able to make it through all of that to a place of love and oneness. But it was a long journey. And like I said, just like the poems show, his journey as well. So he believes you must release fear, judgment, and forgive everything and everybody, and be love, and that is his biggest message for the spiritual path. So the first poem I'm going to read. Let's see here. Okay. Okay. It's called "Never Did I Roam." I forgive myself for judging, for condemning, right or wrong, anyone or anything, myself, my whole life long, my enemies, my saviors, pointing me back home, a place within my heart and soul where never did I roam, a resting place, a place of peace beyond my name and form, in the silence, in the stillness, the eye of the storm. From perception, right or wrong, comes the ego's voice. If I listen to its lies, I surrender my free choice. To see the world as beautiful, to see it through love's eyes, to reveal the truth of innocence, to remove the false disguise. To see the light of God in all, to truly self-realize, to release the little self to all its hooks and ties. In knowing deep within my core, my oneness with the source, my oneness with everything, the way I need not force. It radiates outside me, a flame that burns within, transmuting all the darkness, that which we call sin, are really just misconceptions, clues along the path that guides me on the straight and narrow, transcending all my wrath. God is love. It does not punish nor reward for what I do, yet from my thoughts are effects which reflect my point of view. If I don't like what I see, it's time to look inside. For what I see is what I get. This truth I cannot hide. I can ignore. I can project. I can pretend it is not there. It will not leave. It will not heal. Until I kneel in prayer. Surrender all I think and all I know. My judgments, good and bad, open-hearted, letting go. Of things I thought were sad, knowing they were lessons, signposts pointing home, remembering from where I came, where never did I roam. So, I have a little, like, I'm taking one of his poems and turning it into like a meditation contemplation. So if you'd like, you can close your eyes and we'll just kind of contemplate and meditate through this poem, okay? The closing the eyes is optional, but it does help with concentration when our eyes are closed. We go deeper usually. Okay. So we're going to take 3 deep breaths, really letting our bodies relax. So let's take a nice deep breath in. Holding it for a second and releasing it. Another deep breath. And one more deep breath, holding it in when you get in. And then releasing it. Sweet, amazing grace. Holy Spirit, descend. Saturate my soul. Purify my heart. Heal and make me whole. Ascend within my consciousness. The Christ within my mind. Such sweet, amazing grace. I now see where I was blind. I have found what was lost beneath the veil of fear. I now believe in only love. By grace, it did appear. I am forgiven from the past. No future, I am free. Wholly present in the now, as God created me. Nothing to do, nowhere to go. Like the wind I move, an unseen force guides me with nothing left to prove. But to teach only love, the reason that I'm here, with humility and gratitude, a channel crystal clear. I am the light of the world, the light that never fails. Free from chains of suffering, the cross and the nails. Of myself I do nothing, yet through me all is done. By this sweet, amazing grace, the light, the Christ, the Son, spelled S-U-N. Now we're going to talk, we're going to go into the discussion part of this this now, which is going to be a lot of fun. And I'm going to read you a poem, and the poem's actually labeled Unity and Duality. And as we know, this talk is about how to move from duality, and we all carry duality inside of us, you know. Otherwise, we would be ascended. I'm kidding. We'd already be done. Okay, don't get me started on that one. All right. All right, so I'm going to read this poem, and the poem is Unity and Duality, and then we'll do a discussion, okay? Okay. Yeah. Okay. The unity and duality. Who and what is right and wrong or wrong? What is good or bad? The belief in separation from God and self is driving us quite mad. Every single being has a different point of view. Which point of view is false? And which point of view is true? And of many religions, which has the one true God? The God of love, the God of fear? Reward or punish by the rod? Many ideas of heaven and hell are only states of mind, divided in duality. True peace you'll never find. A little war within the self, the hidden truth to see. To know thyself, look deep inside. There you'll find the key. The secret code to the gate where mysteries reside. The wisdom of the oneness where separation cannot hide. The love of source holds it all. The good and the bad. Judging nothing, right or wrong. Happy, sad, or even mad. Human emotions, polarities, opposites, black and white, negative and positive attracting, the movement, the dance of life. One without the other, there wouldn't be a game. We couldn't share our differences, we'd all be the same. Yet at the deepest level of our being, we are one. Celebrating our diversity, we can really have some fun.
Say something. Hi. Yeah. You know, I didn't get to know Socrates that long, but in the length of time that I got to know him, right off the bat, I got to admit, I was shocked. Here's this big guy, you know, was a bodybuilder and, you know, looked like, you know, kind of, it didn't look that, it didn't strike me as being that deep, just in first vision,
judge,
you know.
The book by the cover.
No kidding. Yeah, well, I opened that cover a little bit, and whoa. he'd come over, and he'd sit on the couch, and we'd just talk, and the depth that was coming out was, I was quite honestly, all I can say, hello there, is that I was totally surprised at the stuff that was flowing out. And then the poetry that I read in here, he helped me. He helped me to step back and not judge, and just simply perceive and be there in the moment. And, well, he helped me in some other things too, and some weird stuff at the very, very end, as you know about. Should I say anything about that?
Are you referring to him helping you with your back through the massage?
No, the very, very end.
Oh, you know, let's not talk about that right now.
Let's not talk about that right now. It's really, it's just too bizarre. But but I tell you, that was the capstone right there that just made it crystal clear that Socrates I'll just say it. Socrates was a man of God.
Thank you, Bill, for sharing.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing.
I mean, it was awful cut because it just shoved the microphone.
You're perfect just the way you are.
He's never prepared, but he's always prepared. That's a good thing about Bill. And you. I'd heard about Socrates. Like the last name, Smith, it would kind of work for me. So what I did, and thank goodness for you and the ones that archived the videos, I went back to, that was 2019 maybe, and found a video of her and him interacting, because I wanted to see who he was and their interaction and all that. You know, and I'm pretty quick studying that stuff, you know. I got it. I was like, wow, okay, got that done. And I've had a couple other friends that have passed, that have left things behind right when they're passing. And so the work that they did in this dualistic situation that we live, the third dimension, just that. It's dualistic. Fifth is not out of that. Everybody gets it. But leaving behind this, we're able to share this knowledge here. We can go from there. Like I say, I just pick it up and do random ones and get something out. It's like the Jesus Calling book I read, and I got another one by Ernest Holmes. It's, you know, by the day, you know, if I want something quick, I just read that because they're the trained professionals. But for him to leave that behind, and you're going to do some other things with it, and from a songwriter standpoint, there's so much there. And that's easy. The words are in, Leroy, just play C, D, G, you know.
That's funny.
So, and what he does, you know, he's has very enlightened prose that he speaks, too. So, but what I'm saying about this is so valuable to all of us. I mean, they did it with the Bible, duh. They've done it with all kinds of other things. So these books are left behind. They live on. The concept lives on, and particularly the ones that the channel, the Christ consciousness.
Yes.
Christ being, that's not Jesus' last name. He had the Christ consciousness. But it shows through and it lives on. And right now it's so pertinent. I mean, this couldn't be more timely. And the work that you did to get it done, and there it is. It's sitting there. And I applaud that.
Thank you so much, Frank. Thank you so much. We're gonna. Did you want to say something?
Yeah, real quick. I was just gonna say. It seems like an overarching theme in all his poetry and his work is his service, his devotion to the service of God. Right. Mm. That seems like that's the overarching theme, and you can tell through his poetry. And I've sat with it, and it's unbelievable. And it makes you realize how deep his commitment, how deep his inner bond was with the one with many names. Mm. And it does make you want to reflect on whether that yearning that's inside of all of us for to serve God and to really deeply awaken through service. And that's something that kind of rung through in some of that prose.
Thank you, Forrest. So I'm gonna. Okay. All right. Sure. Of course. Absolutely.
The other side of the room may have something to say too.
And I've got some wonderful questions for everyone too in a couple minutes.
It was the one you read as a meditation. Okay. That poem carries the energy of baptism.
Oh. Wow.
It was a real clear baptism.
Wow.
Of spirit, of Christ's spirit,
like the like that Christ energy is just like
he called it in right off coming down. Didn't he call a dove in? I think at the beginning of it, yeah, descending like a dove. It was a baptism. I don't know what it's called. It was an amazing poem.
It's called I think Amazing Grace. I believe. Yeah. That's a really good observation. Wow, that's a beautiful observation. Yeah, we can ask that Holy Spirit, that Christ light to come over us and just absolutely just purify us, right? From all the...
It's so much easier when someone else does it for us.
Yeah.
But now we get to do it in a group.
Yeah.
Okay, there's a little shallow part of me that wants to know more about the Chippendale.
Oh.
But never mind. Oh. Oh. I didn't know that, and that was a complete surprise.
Do you need... No, I've got to make a joke after that. Do you need a striptease?
Do what?
Do you need a striptease?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. All right.
I got to see them in Las Vegas, actually.
Okay, all right. Woo! Okay.
The second poem that you read about duality and poality,
uh-huh.
I just had a girlfriend, I talked to her last night,
yeah.
And she's on a spiritual journey. Her mother died a little over a year ago. She was 92, and her mother had kind of been her life partner.
Mm-hmm.
And her mother was wonderful in some aspects, but was a narcissist.
Mm.
So she served her mother her entire life. And now her mother's gone, and she's blossoming.
Yeah.
And oh, wow. She realized that she used to, like, meet people. She'd meet Nancy or Bill or Rhonda, and she'd feel, for all her life, she felt like she automatically knew them and loved them. And then most of them wouldn't reciprocate that. And she'd sit back and think, well, it's me. It's something with me. And what she's realized lately, and I think this is so beautiful, that even at a young age, she recognized the oneness of all of us. And she felt that when she met somebody. And if they didn't reciprocate or meet her, it was just because they weren't there yet.
Yeah.
And she's so freed by it. And that poem expressed that.
Which one?
The second one.
The last poem about duality.
Yes.
Okay, thank you so much. And I'm so happy to hear that your girlfriend's blossoming. And
yes. Yeah.
Feeling free.
She sometimes say, but, you know, gosh, I'm in my 60s. And I said, hey, it's better than not getting it at all. You got it when you were supposed to.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly, yeah.
Anybody else on this side of the circle?
If not, I've got
restriction on this side.
I've got some wonderful contemplative questions for us. So, the first question is, we're going to talk a little bit about, like, what is duality? And one definition would be believing in separation and not believing that in love and oneness. And allowing the ego to take over your beingness, right? That's what creates duality in our world. But Forrest and I actually did a big, huge talk on duality and separation. We did it at his college. So do you want to start off, Forrest, talking a little bit about the definition of duality and some of the examples, like...
Oh.
Like give some examples. Give some examples.
I guess I'm on the spot.
Give us some examples of duality.
I was just going to say the. When I think of duality, I just think of like the illusion of separateness, and that's definitely ringing clear in Socrates' poems.
What are some examples?
Oh my gosh, examples would be like look at our politics, for example. You know, Republican, Democrat. You know, the way we kind of. Move into tribes on that, you know, like even our religions, right? We get really dualistic thinking. My religion's the only way. You think of like the metaphor, I like to think of it as the reality of our religions and the reality of our beliefs is like climbing up a mountaintop and you have six or seven different paths that lead you up this spiritual mountain as a metaphor. And you get to the top and, you know, in our society, we act like there's only one path up that mountain, but really maybe there's six or seven paths up that mountain. And then we get to the top and we're like, far out, there's five other, you know, seekers emerging from all these other paths, right? And so I, when I think of duality, I just think of like this illusion of separateness, this emphasis on our ego self. And I think it's like prevalent in our politics. It's prevalent in our religions,
education,
our education systems. We see it. Yeah, I mean it's there. I mean, look at it's good or bad, you know, or moral or immoral. You're going to heaven. You're going to hell. You know, you're It's just everywhere, right? We see this duality everywhere, and it creates a lot of suffering, and it creates a lot of the needless division between us. I'm thinking about what's happening in the Middle East. That's the first thing that comes to mind. You know, are you with Israel or are you with Palestine? And it's like, you know, nationalism would be another one of those.
It creates hate too.
Creates separation and
hate.
Really, we're all children of God, yeah. and there's no like, are you with Israel? Are you with Palestine? No, you're with humanity, right? You're with all of the innocents that suffer on both sides, right? And we get really caught in this. We really get caught in the separateness. That's what they teach,
That's the fear factor.
That's right.
It's like a tribalism.
Yeah.
I think we start, though, even this week, we even start separating with our idea of God, because Bill and I have talked, people say, you know, the divine feminine. Mm-hmm. We divine that into feminine and masculine. Mm-hmm. God just is. He is all those things. And I think when we define it into the great, the divine feminine,
right.
We sometimes put off males who are very stuck in their masculinity. They're like, whoa, I can't go to the feminine. And if we would just call it, it's God. Exactly. It is all God. Yeah. And we don't have to put the labels on it that we've attached to this world. Somebody else on my side. Oh, you're not on my side.
I don't care. I lost my shoe, too. You know, we do that here. No. I think this place has evolved. You know, when I first got here, oh, my God, it was totally science of mind, and it was all about money and getting more money. And I'm not making that up, for real. And then I've seen it evolve to we dropped that to we started, they started allowing us to have speakers that weren't specifically science of mind. And it took a couple of years before that happened.
Okay.
And then I would say a few years ago, I was still seeing us being somewhat self-righteous about look at the truths that we have, and look, you know, we've dropped all those, you know, all those compartments, and we're this and we're that, but we tended to judge people that were like the fundamentalists, you know, those with all the dogmas and doctrines. And wait a minute, you know, where are we creating more separation?
Absolutely.
You know, and the Jehovah's Witnesses have been coming over to my house a lot and chatting.
I love them when they come.
Oh, they're delightful.
I know.
They've got such a dedication.
I always talk passion.
Yeah, and then I get the Mormons that'll come by.
Oh, I haven't had a Mormon.
Oh, too bad, because the Mormons, the Mormons have got, they've got family,
yeah, they've
life.
Got a great family.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, they've got that.
I live in the States.
Yeah. I was a Mormon for 30 years.
Oh, yeah. Am I making that up?
No, they're great.
They're very
amazing. And you were very family-oriented during that time, too. Very family-oriented.
Yeah. They're very enlightened young men.
The Jehovah's Witnesses do the same thing. They take 2 years out of their life
for mission
work.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
I mean, those...
knocking on strange doors.
Yeah.
Down here. Hey, get the shotgun.
Yeah. Get the hell out of here. There comes the Mormons again. I mean, those people...
Yeah, there's a lot of spiritual discipline.
They could teach us some things.
Agree.
Yeah, they're 21 years old. It's amazing what they know.
Yeah.
That's what freaked me out.
That's a good point, yeah.
And then you guys...
It's because they started teaching their little infants. Like
that.
And I mean, by the time they're 21, they're fully mature. Like,
they're amazing. And then you got the Pentecostals.
Oh, the Pentecostals.
Pentecostals. And, you know, I mean, I don't agree with, you know, the fundamentalist doctrines and stuff like that. But who gives a crap? The bottom line is that, you know, those people could teach us so much about yielding to the Spirit. And when, this is about 3 or 4 years ago, and I will never forget, we were sitting here, and I don't know what, it wasn't during the service, but we were talking about what brought us here to the Spiritual Light Center. And I was literally, and I'm blown away, that 100% of the people that were in the room were called. They felt that calling of spirit. I did. I got freaked out for 3 days. I was sitting in Oklahoma, and I just kept looking at real estate. I was just like, I've got to go there, you know, and just driven, absolutely freaking driven. Well, that's the spirit, okay? But I kind of think that, so we have that connection. But what I could just see us getting a bunch of Pentecostals here to teach us how to, you know, how to really connect to it a little bit better. The bottom line is, we are all one heart, one soul, ascending that mountain. And we just have to drop every single bit
judgment
of the judgment.
That we have zero judgments are allowed.
Ever.
As you climb the mountain, you let go of each judgment.
Every step.
Every step of the way, all the way up.
Yeah.
Until you just have no judgment left. You're and just pure love.
Pure unity.
Love.
Love which is unity.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly, yep.
And I've seen, I want to say, I've seen us move in that direction, and I appreciate it so much. I'm shutting up.
I agree with you. I've seen it, because I used to come and go from here, and I always
loved when Bill was here, and it does what he does well, you know, and he used to come and talk at our place. But I've seen the evolution of all of us, even in the last year.
Wow.
Our consciousness is rising. Do we all agree with everything I just said? For the most part, it's like religion. I feel that I'm a percentage guy. You know, if they, and just from my judgment, if they got 80% of it, that's good. 70, 90, whatever. They all have, the ones that are doing the good work, and you know them by their works and what their intentions are, that they all have a piece of that. And then there's some guy that sits off on a mountain or sits down by the river, it's got it all, like my brother Jay. You know, it's whatever. But they all have pieces of it. So like Bill was saying, there's good in all that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I used to say, eat the meat and spit out some bones, and then I got slapped in the head by an enlightened woman. She said, eat the fruit, spit out the seeds. That's where we're supposed to. But we learn from all that, and it's our discipline, but we can learn from other people. And some of the people that are our worst enemies are our best teachers.
Oh, it's lovely. True. Lovely. Thank you so much, Frank.
And I think we need to remember that we're all in different places on that path.
Yeah.
So we can't judge somebody, because I'm sure when I was earlier in my journey, people told me things that were absolutely true, and I wasn't ready for them, and I just went right on. So we'll get it when it's time. And if we let everybody be in their own place, then there's no judgment.
That's it.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Let go and let God, right?
Yeah. Well, if you judge somebody who's further, if you're already on a hike up a mountain, somebody that's further ahead of you or behind you,
right?
No, you're walking your own path, right?
Yeah, and if you're looking ahead or behind, you're probably going to stumble.
Yeah.
You're going to fall off the mountain.
Look to the paths of the future, and then trip over rock.
Okay, so the next question is, do you guys have a really strong desire to awaken? Some people say enlightenment, some people say ascension. And if so, why? Tell me about that burning. Does anyone have a burning desire that just burns in them so
personally,
deeply? Yeah, personally. Oh, you know, We can use the word awaken, enlightenment, or
We want that? I mean, that's all ascension. The good stuff at this point in life. We don't have to go, in my case, 56 years studying all of it. I mean,
but I'm talking about that burning
desire. No, the burning thing is,
You have it?
I've had it for a long time.
Why?
Because I wanted to know the truth in the matter. I'm a truth seeker. Everybody's got an opinion. Everybody's got other things, and everybody's got that. But we've got our perspective. But from my perspective, I want to know what resonated in me. So I did all these studies, and now it's simpler than I thought. I don't have to do all that work. I've already done the work. I've done the shadow work, getting rid of all the woo-woo stuff. And that helps because you can't drag around these ghosts or these shadows or big bag of poo-poo and try to go ahead. You just got to let that go. And once you just say, I just let that go. I'm not even going to judge myself. Like I've told you, no one kicks your butt like you do. Other people don't kick your butt like you do. So we've got to stop that. If we love God, we love ourselves. And even if we don't think we love ourselves, if we love God, then why are we doing that to God's creation?
Well, I agree with you about the shadow work. My own personal humble opinion is you're not going to get anywhere until you do your shadow work. And your shadow work is basically going inward and looking at your wounds and your hurts and your pains and all the areas where you get triggered. If you don't do that work, you're going to stay fumbling around in pain and misery, basically.
The last thing I'm going to say, because I think it's pertinent, Adam and Megan that come here and they work with me and for me and stuff. The other night, I was telling Bill this, I was over at their house late. I come in the next morning, we're working on some tech stuff, and Megan is so mellow and so calm. She said, well, when you get a minute, Frank, I'm going to show you something she wants to say. I said, what's that? She said, I wrote a book last night.
Wow.
I said, what? Say what? I wrote a book last night. I said, oh. Did you record it like I did? No. I typed it out and I did this book. And it's on shadow work and how to move, get to shadow work. And most people don't know what shadow work is, but then what you do, and then you do the work like you've done the work, we've all done the work. And then to move on from that. And she wrote it in 3 or 4 hours, typed it out. I'm staring at him going, holy crap.
That's the most amazing
thing. That was one of the more amazing. But it was on shadow work. And we have to do that shadow work because we're now transitioning. Wow. We've talked about this before from third to fifth dimension. We're in four here. And you can stand on a tightrope. But if you know you're heading that way, you got to do the shadow work. In this dualistic world, if you want to go into the fifth, which is not dualistic, there's no polarization there. There's no arguments there. Everybody gets it.
That's right.
So, but I just want to tell you, that book is coming, and so we're going to print it out this week.
I'm so excited.
A little bit. But she wrote it in 3 or 4 hours. I was blown out.
Yeah. I really want to read that. I'm so excited.
Well, I was just going to say, I think that yearning we all have for enlightenment or ascension or awakening is synonymous with, like, I think the reason why it's so strong in us, I know it is in me, and I'm sure I could feel everybody in here, it's the same thing in all of you. It's like the reason for that is because, in my humble opinion, is we have that yearning, we deeply want to serve, right? I think it's funny, like, we talk a lot about enlightenment, we talk about these terms, ascension. A lot of the masters teach that, you know, you don't even focus on enlightenment. I mean, actually, the big thing, I guess the lineage I follow really closely, Neem Karoli Baba and Ram Dass, Maharaji taught Ram Dass, he said, don't even think about enlightenment. What are you doing? Like, you don't know fully who and what you are yet. Focus on service, right? Like, just love, serve, and then in that service, remember what you're a part of, and you'll remember that you're a part of God, and that God is a part of you, and that you're reflections of one another, that there's no separation, it's only one. And so I think like that yearning, I would describe, instead of that yearning for like enlightenment, mm-hmm. it's more of a yearning to serve, mm-hmm. knowing that we're a part of that, like, you know, we're a part of the one, you know. And I think, so the answer to the question, I'm not sure if like, I think enlightenment and ascension are great ideas. And I think they'll come from obviously doing your shadow work, but then also service. I think there's something really big about the service component that brings us into that unity consciousness, then that helps us along the ascending the mountain to enlightenment or whatever you want to call it. But there's definitely a service component in there. And I remember you saying too, Angela, that Socrates, all he wanted to do was serve, right?
And that is our second question.
Yeah, there's something powerful about that.
Yeah. I want to bring one comment. And it's,
we're getting close to the end of our time. Okay, so shut up. I have one more poem to go.
Okay.
Okay.
Does it really matter mm-hmm. what building you're in if you throw open all the windows? It's going to be the same light that's going to flood in.
Wow.
And we talk about enlightenment and what we have to do and what we have to accomplish and where we have to be. And I think of the people climbing the mountain on whatever path. You know, in spirit, there is no space and there is no time.
Mm-hmm.
So would it really matter where that person is on the mountain if all they did is throw their soul open to the light? They would be in enlightenment at that point. And then I could continue to do whatever work I needed to do or whatever service, but during which time I would have my eyes open and my heart open, and I would be at that point of what we call enlightenment. Wherever I am and in whatever I'm doing and wherever I am on the path.
If your heart's fully open and your mind is fully open to God, then you'll naturally serve and you'll naturally arrive to where you have to be in that moment.
Precisely.
The highest form of sense.
I don't think
that's
believing is learning. I think it's remembering.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's it.
Because it's in.
I think from what you said, though, that yearning is for connection, which is the unity, and service is a path.
Yeah, right.
Because when you're serving others, you have to recognize them as human, as part of the whole.
Yeah.
And so that is a connection to unity by serving, rather than it being the desire, that the desire is actually the connection you get from service.
Yes, connections. I think you're right. Connections.
And the connection, and it, when I felt the word connection, it does feel like enlightenment feels like connection.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
That's the same energy.
And then service is a path to that connection.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Yeah.
Yeah.
If we ask, how many commandments are there?
One.
There's two.
Well,
but that's okay. But no, we've had 10 commandments when I joined the LDS Church. That's one of the reasons I walked away. I said that one came out of my mouth. When I joined this church, there was 10 commandments, but there's two.
Two.
Love God, know God, and love your neighbor as yourself. There's your service.
Yeah. That's simple. Yeah, that simplifies it.
He'll
set
that up and
we'll
get squealing.
Okay.
So basically, that was a fun discussion, and what I found hearing all of you speak is that we all have a slightly different perspective on it, but again, we're all going the same direction. So, and we're all going to get there, and we all are on our journey, and hopefully, we're helping each other, which is what service is. We're helping each other on this mountain, going up, 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 up. We're all like, here, let me help you up that hard. It's a hard ridge to get up. Let me put my hand down there and help you up, and we're all. And that, to me, is a good definition of service, right? Yeah, I know. I heard that.
We didn't talk about the trees, but they were there. That was where you were.
That is true.
All right, I have this last poem, and then you guys are going off to another room to have a board meeting here in just a minute. So I am going to read this beautiful poem to you, and this will be a nice way to end our time together and our time with Socrates and his beautiful work and our love for him. Okay. This poem is called Hearts and Minds Aligned, and it really goes nicely for this beautiful church spiritual center that we have. Where two or more are gathered, it's written, I am there. An invisible, powerful presence, we commune in prayer. The purest prayer is gratitude. Love always preserves. Surrendering the ego's will with its judgments and fears. We join with the hearts wide open, channels for the divine, sharing the fruits of spirit as branches of the vine. As we give, we receive, and reap what we sow. From the goodness of our souls, we each help, transforming the world of suffering, healing the whole human race. A simple choice to be made. Conditions do not define our power to recreate with hearts and minds aligned. To perceive the perfection in everything is the secret to permanent change. To try to change the outside first to the nature of spirit, it is strange. Spirit sees and knows the truth that only love is real. Whatever the appearances, they never can conceal. The truth that's true always, from oneness we have come. There is no separation.
Yeah.
One hearts and minds aligned.
Yeah.
Yeah. Love you guys so much, and thank you.
That was awesome. Thank you. And thank you, Socrates.
Thank you, Socrates.
Well, he's right over there.